This is All of It. I'm Kusha Navidar in for Allison Stewart. Thanks for spending part of your day with us. I'm grateful you're here. And I'm grateful that I can share with you an update about Allison. She wanted us to tell you that she is on medical leave. She had a brain abscess and is recovering following a successful surgery. We can't wait to have her back. Coming up on today's show, I'll speak with actor Tobias Menzies about his new play, The Hunt, and his new TV series, Manhunt. Manhunt is based on a book by author James Swanson, and he joins us as well. Plus, we'll learn about the chemistry of flavor from food scientist Ariel Johnson. That's the plan, so let's get this started with some traditional Irish music from the band Dervish. That is Midsummer's Night from Dervish, the popular Irish folk band that is currently on its 30th annual tour around the U.S. Since 1989, Dervish has been preserving and reimagining the folk musical traditions of Ireland, specifically County Sligo in the Northwest. Their efforts have earned them a BBC Lifetime Achievement Award. This Sunday is St. Patrick's Day, always a big deal in New York, with the annual parade taking place this Saturday, and it so happens that Dervish's music and the history of Sligo-style folk has a strong New York connection, which we'll get to later. Dervish plays tonight in Fairfield, Connecticut, as well as on Long Island in Riverhead on St. Patrick's Day, March 19th in Old Saybrook, and Red Bank, New Jersey on March 20th. And with me now to talk about their music and anniversary tour are two members of the band, founding member and accordion player Shane Mitchell and longtime lead vocalist Kathy Jordan. Hi, Shane and Kathy.
Hi,
welcome.
Hi, how are you doing?
How are you, Kusha?
So, big anniversary, 30 years of tours in the U.S. We were saying coming up on 33 of the band being together. I hope you're keeping track of all those frequent flyer miles.
Well, unfortunately, yeah, that falls by the wayside sometimes, you know, depending on the airline. But we do love to come here every year. It's the mainstay of the year. It's what everything else kind of hangs around. Our March tour is the very fulcrum of the band's year, you know, and has been of the band's lifetime so far. It's such an easy place to tour. There's long-term troubadours and wandering minstrels haven't paved the way over the years for us. People like the Chieftains and, you know, all the greats of Irish music. So there is a circuit there, and there's a huge diaspora, of course, of Irish people. But it's not just the diaspora, it's not just Irish people we play to, and we always love to find new audiences and play to people that have never heard the music before, such as yourself, I believe.
Absolutely. It's been a pleasure listening just over the past few days to get acquainted with it. Absolutely. Shane, as you're thinking about 30 years of touring in America, as you're touring this year, what do you find yourself reflecting on in this 30th year?
I think how so much has changed, really. When we started touring out in America in the early days, I remember us collecting quarters to phone our agent from a coin box at the side of the road to see what the next update was. And there's none of that anymore. Everything comes in over the phone, and you know, you'd buy a map and you'd be planning the day before where you were going next. And today, I mean, it's just, you have Google Maps and different things. So it's completely changed. But the audiences for Irish music have changed as well. When we came out here first, it was mainly Irish American people, and it still is a lot, but it's very multicultural now. It's really grown and expanded a lot out. Yeah, everything has changed.
Is that increase in diversity a gradual change or something that really picked up more recently?
I think it's a gradual change. I often think Irish music, it's like a volcano. Sometimes it's there all the time under the surface, and sometimes it bubbles up and gets a resurgence and gets a new audience, and they might stay with it or go away, but there'll be another surge down the line again. I think the more it gets exposed in different movies, and the more Ireland's programs get watched over over the world, you know, Irish music is always there. It's always something that finds a new audience, no matter where it goes.
What did you think about your first exposure, the first time that you came to America? What do you remember about that first tour? Where did you go?
Well, I remember I was shocked because we played at the Chicago Irish Festival, and I just couldn't believe all the greenness, you know, because we don't have to dress in green at home. We have green fields. We're surrounded by it. But over here, this green, it's like green Christmas, green T-shirts, green beads, green hats, green leprechaun outfits. So that was a shock to the system. Wow, this is how it's celebrated over here. And this, I had never seen that before. But it's just such fun. And I love the way that, you know, all these miles away from home, that it's celebrated and loved by so many people that aren't Irish at all, have no affiliation with the country, and everyone becomes Irish, you know, on St. Patrick's Day and St. Patrick's Month, you know, which is the month of March.
You know, you're performing all around the country now and in our area coming up. So tonight in Fairfield, Connecticut. Shane, you've toured for 30 years in America. Why do you think people here respond so well to it, like Kathy was mentioning?
It's really difficult to say, but I suppose there's something very authentic about Irish music, and something very deep, something very emotional, and it has so many different sides that, you know, you don't always get in other genres. But I think the character of the Irish people and the personality of the Irish people is in the music itself. Mm. And I think that's something that people here respond to. And it's not just people with Irish families visit Ireland, you know, from America. It's, as I said before, it's very multicultural and it's very wide these days. So I think it's the music itself.
And what is that personality? How would you describe it?
Well, I suppose there's a wildness there. Mm. There's a fun side to it. There's an emotional side to it. You know, and there's the party element, of course, which really reflects Ireland.
It's funny you bring that up. You put out live records in the past. I'm just thinking about like a live party. And since you're playing so many shows live in our area, I thought we could listen to a sample. This is Hills of Greenmore from your 1997 album, Live in Palma.
Blow to the green fields on Tatsu, where the huntsmen to go, for to meet the bold sportsmen from our own Katy town, and love the sport better than the boys from Meadown. And when we arrived, they were all standing there, so we took to the green fields in search of the hare. We did not go far when someone gave cheer over hills and high meadows. The prey did appear.
Shane, you're talking about how this is a party as part of the personality of the music. And, you know, that was a live performance that we were just listening to. What makes the live aspect of folk music important? In other words, what would someone miss just listening to a record?
Well, I suppose that the band are there and, you know, we talk to the audience and there's introductions and we talk about the music and its background and all that side of things. But I suppose, you know, like our music comes from pub sessions. We grew up playing jam sessions in pubs, and that was always a session in Ireland is really good fun, and it's kind of a party kind of atmosphere. So that comes through in the music, I think, as well.
Yeah, there's lots of energy and vitality, and, you know, that. It's the same with any gig, I suppose. It's better live in a lot of cases, but particularly in Irish music, I think the musicians respond to the excitement within the room and that's all around. And it's kind of like a tennis match. There's a serve and return, and the energy gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and it explodes, you know, sometimes. And it's just a really powerful thing to be a part of.
Yeah.
It really is. And then the songs bring all that. It's like the yin and the yang, bring all that, another side to it, a more emotional, melancholy side. And all the songs kind of store our, you know, past experiences and the memories from our ancestors. And, you know, like that particular song is, you know, of a time, and it tells a story, got handed down through generations. So we carry those with us and pass them on. So they'll always be with us as living kind of memories.
It seems so rooted in community and from where you're from. Is that fair to...
Well, it is. And I mean, a lot of the songs, if I sing them and I know my parents or neighbours or community have sang them, that really resonates with me as I sing them, and I tap into that emotion. And, you know, and they would have sang them tapping into the emotion of the people they heard them from, and on it goes. It's like a river of all sorts of emotions, and it's a very powerful, unique thing.
Yeah, and so County Sligo is a fundamental part of the band, where you're from and where that music comes from, right?
Sure, yeah. Shane is from Sligo, and I'll let him talk.
How would you describe Sligo?
Well, I suppose in music terms, Sligo has played a very important part in the development of Irish music, and there's a particular connection with New York City, of course, as well. Like in the 1920s, you know, a lot of fiddle players who emigrated to America were their music was captured on record by American record companies, and the main person was who's called the godfather of Irish music is Michael Coleman. And I think he made something like 80 recordings on Decca and Columbia and different labels in the 1920s. Like, Irish music was pretty much gone at that stage, only that those 78 albums came back to Ireland. People started playing Irish music again, and then they were playing them in the houses, and then the whole social side of life developed, and the music went into pubs and bars, and then you had all sorts of different genres of music playing in bars. So that journey from Sligo to America is a very important one, and, you know, we owe a lot to America for somewhat saving our music in some ways, if you look at it that way.
Yeah, sorry, yeah. Keep going.
Yeah, I mean, the record company A&R, if they were called that those days, were very sharp to capture the likes of Michael Coleman. He used to play at all the highbrow events around New York City, and he was followed by jazz musicians and classical musicians. And he's a very important figure in Irish music in general.
And he's buried in St. Raymond's Cemetery in the Bronx, interestingly.
He is. And actually,
yeah,
we're going to visit his grave for the first time this Monday coming. We're doing another piece about this as well. But he's buried here in New York. I mean, you can walk down the street in New York in the evening and go into a pub that has Irish music, and it'll be Sligo style of music of tunes you'll be hearing. So,
how did Dervish first form? What's the story behind that?
Well, the lads were working in London, were approached by a local entrepreneur, music shop owner, God rest him, his name is Aidan Mannion, he died only recently, and he kind of invested in making a recording of Sligo music, following on from the likes of Coleman, I suppose, all those years previously. And that record was made, and it got launched at an All-Ireland FLA. This is a competition that starts regionally in all the counties, then goes to the provinces, and then goes to the all of Ireland. And it picks a town, and it was in Sligo Town for 3 years. So that record kind of grew legs, you know, if you like, and got more popular when it was brought out. It was called The Boys of Sligo. And from the popularity of it, they felt they needed a singer to you know, to have another element, another string to the bow, so to speak. So I had known the lads from visiting Sligo, visiting my sister who was in college there, and always finding sessions and traditional music around. So they got to know me and my singing, and I got to know them. So when they needed a singer, I was the one they called, and I was working in a different county. So I put all my things in a bag and hitchhiked down to Sligo to join the circus. And here I am talking to you now, all these years later. And only last year, I met the man in Seattle who gave me that lift that day when I went off to join the circus. I have a picture on my phone of me and him. And he was so excited for me and followed my career since, because I was so excited, and I was telling him what I was going to do and, you know, where I was going to go. And he thought, you know, she will. And anyway, I met him in Seattle last year, and he had traveled as well. So it was...
What a wonderful story. Shane, what do you remember about that? And what was it about Kathy that made you go, okay, well, that's the voice?
We were all kind of hanging around together. Liam and Michael and myself played in another band, and we used to play up around Roscommon and Longford where Kathy was, and we knew Kathy that time. But we were kind of... working in the real world as such those days, and you know, the recording came out, and we were getting inquiries from all over the world, and we're away most weekends playing someplace, you know. And after a while, over a period of time, the jobs got jacked in, and we gradually became professional musicians. But yeah, it was a very exciting time, you know. We never really planned this in some ways. It just kind of happened, really. But we all grew up together. It was kind of like a family band in some ways, you know. Yeah.
And Kathy, I love listening to you talk about your voice and what it is for you to sing these songs. When someone listens to your record, you can hear the storytelling. I'd love to listen to an example of that singing. This is Red-Haired Mary.
As I was going to the fair of Bingo and fine morning last July, a fine young man came up behind me, red-haired Mary, he did cry. Will you come with me, my red-haired Mary, the donkey he can carry too? I looked up to my eyes a twinkle, the cheeks they were rosy, yo. Thank you kindly, sir, I answered then, I tossed me by the hair. Says I, will you hold the donkey and I'll ride with you to the Dingo Fair? When he reached the town of Dingo, he caught me and was said, and a tinker he pulled up behind him, hit him right in his left eye. Take your hands off red-haired Mary, she and I.
Kathy, how did you develop your own musical voice?
Well, my mother's told me I was singing before I was talking, so... And it's something I always gravitated towards, was music and singing. And in my house, my parents sang, and brothers and sisters, I was the youngest of seven. So there was lots of singing going on, and we were always encouraged to have a repertoire. And so I had my first songs at 3 and 4, you know, and... But, you know, while everyone else would wait their turn to sing, I wanted to be singing all night. So I always loved it. And I suppose my first teachers were my family and uncles, aunts, parents, brothers, sisters, neighbours. And I just loved, you know, when my father in particular or my brothers would close their eyes to sing, you know, everything else would disappear. And you're left with that voice and the story and how that resonated with me then and how it still does, and even more so now because my father is no longer with us. So it's more meaningful to me now. So I guess I sing with them in my heart all the time, I suppose. Yeah.
If you're just joining us, this is All of It. I'm Kusha Navidar, and we are talking to two members of the band Dervish, who are this year on their 30th annual world tour, or sorry, 30th annual tour around the United States. They've been many places in the United States, 30 times around the sun. They're playing a concert tonight in Fairfield, Connecticut at 7:30 p.m., and they'll also be playing on Long Island in Riverhead on Sunday, which is St. Patrick's Day, and March 19th in Old Saybrook at Red Bank, New Jersey on March 20th. Shane, I'd love to get into the fundamental, I guess, anatomy of the folk music that we're listening to. Thinking about the history of Sligo folk style music. Are there any rules, things that are just at the underbed of what makes Sligo style folk music itself?
Well, in Ireland, we have different regional styles of music, and they all have a different kind of a description. In Sligo, the music has been always rhythmic and very lively and very much dance music. And it was mainly based around the fiddle and the flute, and then a man called Joe Burke brought the accordion in, and a man called Alfie Joe Deneen, who actually taught myself and Liam how to play, brought the accordion into the tradition very much. So it's upbeat and lively, but lots of ornamentation. And our heroes growing up were people like Fred Finn and Peter Horn and Seamus Tansey and the great Matt Malloy, who was the flute player with the Chieftains and people like that. But the area that we actually come from, they used to say years back, you know, in the old days, that, you know, most houses had a fiddle. And, you know, if you stood outside the church on Sunday, most people could play a tune as such. But, to answer your question, it's ornamentation, kind of...
Wild, definitely.
And you play the accordion?
I played the accordion, yeah.
So Kathy said that she was singing before she was talking. Were you playing the accordion before you were talking?
Well, both my parents were involved in music. My mother was an Irish dancing teacher, the old style of dancing. My father played the fiddle, and they had a pub in Sligo in the 60s, which was probably one of the first music pubs in the area. And my father was one of the few people who had a car at the time, and he used to drive around picking up musicians to play a session in the pub. So I remember my earliest memories of music was I was being minded by my grandmother, and I came down the stairs one night by accident, and I walked into the pub, and it was full of people dancing and playing, and that was my first introduction to music. So, but I suppose... My parents sold the pub then, and we moved out to the country, but I suppose I couldn't miss it really, because my father used to play for country house dances with my uncle John, and it was that was the social scene in those days. They used to cycle around on their two bikes and go to a different house every weekend. And sometimes, you know, I do think about that. Sometimes when we're on tour and I'm looking out the window of the bus, I do think of my father and my uncle. Things never really change, do they?
No, and it's something that stands out from both of those stories is the community that's involved in, you know, the creation of music and musicians. In 2019, skip a few years later, you released your latest album, which is called The Great Irish Songbook, and it features performances from a wide array of guest vocalists, you know, playing to that community theme. The U.S. famously has a great American songbook of its own standards. So either of you, how would you describe the music of The Great Irish Songbook? Are there any themes that connect all those tunes?
Well, what connects them is Ireland, and I suppose the sing-song that we all grew up with, like the soundtrack to Ireland in a lot of ways, you know. We burst into song at given any opportunity, at any occasion. We just love to do it. And it's a tradition that, you know, has been there for generations and is still there very strongly in the youth of Ireland. So these songs are a representation of some of the ones you would hear on a regular basis in a sing-song situation or a session situation or a house party. Songs like The Parting Glass, songs like The Galway Shawl, like The Ramblin' Irishman, you know, the list goes on there. But what was really touching for us is that when we did ask people, you know, of international standards such as Vince Gill and David Gray, it's amazing how many of them jumped at the chance to sing an Irish song and who had an Irish song in their hearts and in their minds that mightn't necessarily fit with their own records that they're making, but they're dying to get their
be a part of that community
and to sing those songs.
And as you're looking ahead, you're expected to release a new album this year, Great Irish Songbook Chapter 2. Shane, what can you tell listeners about what to expect from that album and maybe when it'll be released?
Well, it's in development at the moment, and what we're hoping to release it actually next year, so we hope to have it ready this year. But yeah, we're looking at newer songs in the last 70 years, you know, and there's so many of them out there, and it's kind of a bookend to the first one. So this is chapter two.
Chapter two, next year.
Next year, yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
I've been speaking with Shane Mitchell and Kathy Jordan of the Irish folk band Dervish as they continue their 30th annual tour of the U.S. They'll be playing in our area tonight in Fairfield at 7:30 and on Sunday on Long Island in Riverhead, March 19th in Old Saybrook, and on March 20th in Red Bank, New Jersey. A lot of great performances coming up. Thanks for coming into the studio.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely. And happy St. Patrick's Day, everyone.
Yeah.
Let's go out on a song from Dervish's latest album, The Great Irish Songbook.
I am a rambling Irishman. In Ulster I was born. In Inverness the happy hour I spent, on the banks of sweet Lochearn. For to live poor I could not endure, like others of my station. To America I sailed away and left this Irish nation right. Tan-tan-na-na, tan-tan-na-na, right, tan-tan-na-no, in the Nandy. The night before I sailed away.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.